also blamed Washington for its unjustified withdrawal from the accord. He added that, despite this, Tehran actively participated in 5 rounds of negotiations with Washington in May and June. However, he said Iran came under U.S.-Israeli attacks when it was set to participate in the 6th round of talks. Araghchi reiterated Iran's right to uranium enrichment, stressing that Tehran continues to act within international law. He also emphasized Tehran's openness to dialogue over the nuclear program. Well, the Israeli military kills more Palestinians in Gaza as it presses ahead with its genocidal campaign in the blockaded Strip. At least 30 Palestinians have been killed across the Palestinian territory since dawn. 12 of them were aid seekers. In one of the latest strikes, several people were injured after Israeli warplanes bombed a residential building in the Yarmouk area of Gaza City. Heavy artillery shelling also pounded the El Nasser neighborhood west of the same city. 6 Palestinians were killed and several others injured as a residential building in Deir el-Balah was targeted. Moving to the south, 3 people lost their lives in Khan Yunis in an airstrike on tents sheltering the displaced. The death toll from the U.S.-Israeli genocide now exceeds 66,000, with more than 168,300 others injured. The chiefs of the United States and Israel met yet again in Washington as the two continue to collude in the genocide of Gaza. A 20-point so-called peace plan was unveiled, but many say the two leaders have no intention of stopping their horrific war. Rahman Mazahari reports from Washington, D.C.
Israeli Premier Benjamin Netanyahu made his 4th trip to the White House this year, where protesters greeted him with demands that Washington serve the arrest warrant of the International Criminal Court for war crimes and crimes against humanity. Netanyahu and U.S. President Donald Trump issued a list of 20 demands to end their attempted genocide in Gaza, but their so-called peace plan is so one-sided it seems sure to be rejected by Palestinians. Many say that a guaranteed rejection in order to continue their genocidal campaign is actually the real goal.
If Hamas rejects the deal, which is always possible, they're the only one left. Everyone else has accepted it. But I have a feeling that we're going to have a positive answer. But if not, as you know, Bibi, you'd have our full backing to do what you would have to do.
As the Gaza genocide nears its 2-year mark, Israel continues to murder innocent civilians on a daily basis. Many believe that a plan that has little chance of being accepted is also a propaganda diversion aimed at Western societies to distract from the horrific invasion and famine siege of Gaza City, the area's capital.
Absolutely a distraction. They're about as sincere as they were with interventionism in Vietnam or Cambodia, and we all saw how that went. Those legacies always come back in a circle, and, you know, I think any peace plan that does not directly involve the Palestinian people and a sovereign plan of their own is going to be ultimately insincere. It invalidates itself outright.
The Gaza genocide has shattered Israel's global standing, but many protesters want to remind the world that Israel couldn't have done it without the arms and diplomatic cover of 2 different administrations in Washington.
While Western liberal democracy is often accused of walling off public policy from public opinion, polls show that the approval rating of the Israeli-U.S. genocide is down to just 32%, with its disapproval rating now standing at 60%. Ramin Mazahari, Washington, D.C.
Well, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad has reacted to Trump's so-called Gaza ceasefire plan. The movement rejected the American-Israeli truce proposal as, quote, a recipe for igniting the region. The Islamic Jihad said the plan announced by Trump and Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is an American-Israeli agreement which expresses Tel Aviv's full position. It added that the plan is a formula to continue the aggression against the Palestinian people. The movement noted that by accepting this proposal, Israel seeks to impose on Palestinians what it could not achieve through war. Gaza's government media office also rejected the plan, saying it offers no just or durable solution. The office warned that the plan only seeks to legitimize Israeli occupation and strip Palestinians of their national, political, and human rights. and noted that the only way to end the genocide is to stop Israel's attacks, lift the blockade of Gaza, end the systematic extermination of Palestinians, and guarantee their right to live in freedom and establish an independent state. Political commentator Eric Wahlberg believes that the proposal offered by the U.S. president is in fact an Israeli plan, which is aimed at disarming Hamas.
We can't trust either Trump or Netanyahu. They both are liars, absolute liars. Hamas gave a gesture of goodwill on Trump's inauguration, and they released an American prisoner with the understanding that Trump would really be serious about having a ceasefire and to bring some kind of credibility to what's happening in the Middle East. But he didn't do anything. He just ignored. He got this nice goodwill offering and then just thumbed his nose at the Palestinians. Basically, it's Israeli's plan. They want to disarm Hamas completely. Well, how can you disarm the resistance group? That's the only group that's stopping or that's standing in the way of Israel completely destroying and getting rid of all Palestinians.
The Colombian president has once again lambasted his U.S. counterpart for the complicity in the Gaza genocide, saying Trump should be jailed under the Rome Statute. Gustavo Petro also called for the implementation of the ICC arrest warrant for the Israeli premier during his visit to the U.S.
There is nothing illegitimate about applying the consequences of the Rome Statute, whether in the United States or anywhere else. If Mr. Trump keeps being complicit in a genocide, as he is up to today, he deserves nothing but jail, and his army should not obey him. The Rome Statute defines crimes against humanity, war crimes, and other international crimes. Anyone indicted by its tribunals can, in principle, be arrested by any country they enter. This means Netanyahu could be arrested in the United States. So why hasn't this happened? Why do they disregard their obligations under international law?
President Petro also announced the termination of all free trade agreements with Israel. He urged Colombian coal companies to either comply with the new policy or sell their concessions. Petro's remarks came after the Trump administration revoked his visa for joining a pro-Palestinian protest outside the United Nations in New York. During his address to the UNGA, Petro rebuked Trump for being complicit in the genocidal war on Gaza. Moving now to the occupied West Bank, which remains a scene of Israeli violence. In the latest developments, the regime's forces have carried out fresh raids on the cities of Jenin, Ramallah, and Salfit, arresting Palestinians and demolishing residential buildings. We are now joined by our Ramallah correspondent, Naka Hamed, for the latest details. Naka, again, these arrestments, these detainments continue. And, of course, these raiding of these homes in the middle of the night, during the day, no time matters. And it's as if the Palestinians have no lives of their own, basically. Naka, what details do you have for us there on the ground?
Well, unfortunately, Caitlin, Palestinians have a life, do have a life of their own, but it is a captured life. It is a life under occupation. It's highlighted by pain and agony because we have developments by the Israeli forces, aggression by the Israeli forces on an hourly basis. I was preparing to give you the latest updates that happened through the night and through the hours of the early morning, but now we have even further updates on the ground. Let me start quickly by the most recent update that we have from the Palestinian Red Crescent Society, as they have announced that they have received a Palestinian young man who was shot by foot in the town of Arran, to the north of occupied Al-Quds, where the Israeli forces have shot that young man while he was walking beside the separation wall in that area. It's quite known these days that the Israeli forces are targeting Palestinian workers as they cross to the places that they work, either in the areas of northern occupied Al-Quds or inside occupied territories. In another form of aggression over here in Ramallah, the Israeli forces have raided the villages of Shukba and the village of Beit Liqia. In Shukba, the Israeli forces and bulldozers demolished an industrial facility to the Palestinian Ratib Nasser, and under the pretense that it is not, it does not have a proper licenses, and it is built in Area C. This was not the only demolishing that happened today in the occupied West Bank, as the Israeli forces in the hours of the morning have raided the province of Salfit and demolished three Palestinian homes in the village of Brooklyn to the west of Salfit. These three homes were three floors for each building had three floors. So we are talking about almost 10 families have been displaced and found themselves without shelter. In 1 second, they have found themselves in the streets without shelter. In the of course, the northern part of the West Bank is enduring a lot of suffering and agony as the Israeli forces is pressing ahead with the military operation, the Iron Wall, in Tul Kerem and Jenin, and it has resulted in even further escalation, especially in Jenin, as the villages of Ya'bat, Qabatia, Anin, and other villages to the west of Jenin are enduring relentless violence. At least for the last week, we are talking about a very obvious escalation. Just in the hours of the night, the Israeli forces raided Anin and detained tens of Palestinian youth, beat them severely. Many of them were hospitalized due to that beating and due to these violations.
Yes, Naka, it seems, I'm afraid I'm going to have to cut you off. I apologize for that, of course. Naka Hamad, everyone, our correspondent there joining us from Ramallah. I'd like to thank you very much for those updates. The chief of staff of the Iranian Armed Forces says the country is exceptionally prepared for any possible military confrontation in the future. Major General Abdulrahim Mousavi made the remark during a visit to naval units of the Iranian Army and the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps in Bandar Abbas. He said that with a short period, Iran's naval forces have made significant advances in terms of both strength and readiness. Iran's top general also noted that the armed forces have thoroughly and carefully analyzed the strategies employed by the adversaries, particularly in light of the recent 12-day imposed war. Furthermore, Mousavi asserted that the operational capabilities of the IRGC Navy have been substantially enhanced. The U.S. seems to be bracing for a government shutdown as Democrats and Republicans are at odds over a spending bill, with each side blaming the other for the looming crisis. Vice President J.D. Vance has said he believes a shutdown is likely to happen.
We have to keep essential services functioning as well as possible if the Democrats shut down the government, and Russ has been tasked with making sure that's possible. Now, you asked about negotiations, and they had some ideas that I actually thought were reasonable, and they had some ideas that the president thought was reasonable. What's not reasonable is to hold those ideas as leverage and to shut down the government unless we give you everything that you want.
Vance made the remarks after a last-ditch meeting between the Trump administration and Democratic leaders in Congress made little progress. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer has also said there are very large differences between his party and the White House. Republicans have proposed extending government funding at current levels until November the 21st, but Democrats say any agreement for the extension must preserve expiring health benefits. Well, thank you very much for Sarah's headlines. More updates, as always, please stay tuned to World News. Goodbye for now.
You can talk it down, turn the other way. Fear the truth, but it won't go away. Can you hear it calling? Yeah. You can write it down, but nobody cares. It's an untold story of our biggest fears.
need forgiving. There's a part of me that won't understand, having sleepless nights with my head in my hands. I'm here and tears are falling, yeah. If I could right the wrongs, would you lend me your hand? I would make a difference to this beautiful land. If I'm nothing, I have my intention. When the sun goes down and there's nothing left around, can you feel it? Can you feel it? When your knees are on the ground, you may fear but it's allowed. Are you listening? 'Cause I need forgiving. I need forgiving.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar. A lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Now let's listen to the speech of Sheikh Jafar Jafar.
I begin in the name of Allah, the most kind, the most merciful. It's due to that kindness and mercy that we have these opportunities where we gather in remembrance and glorification of Him, Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. We then begin this sermon the way the Commander of the Faithful used to begin many of his, by advising us, Usikum ibadallah bittaqwallah, that I advise you, the servants of God, to be God-conscious, God-fearing, and pious human beings. We have been discussing the journey towards reformation, towards becoming better human beings, and in particular, we've reached that station where we are now discussing the importance of silence and the importance of speech. And in last week's discussion, we said that what's important is that we find a balance between silence and speech. And it's this balance that we have to struggle for. And some of the tips that we have been given by our ulama is that, for example, we think before we speak. Subhanallah, we've been told this since we are children, you know, that we think before we speak. We ask ourselves, will this be of any benefit? We ask ourselves, will this offend anyone? And these questions in themselves could answer for us whether it's better that I talk or better that I remain silent. But the major aspect that we have to learn is to practice adalat within our own lives, balance. And this i'tidal or balance in our lives pertains to our desires, our anger, our intellect. If we can have control over these things, then we have a balance in our lives. And when an individual has reached a station where they are on that journey towards balance, I think to find that permanent balance is very difficult, right? Because things can happen. We can get thrown out of our normal thinking path or whatever it is, and we may do things that are out of ordinary. But when we are on that journey towards balance, then we are told at this particular point that speech is better than silence. And there's a very beautiful hadith that we mentioned last week, but I really like this one from our fourth Imam As-Sajjad alayhi afdalu salatu wassalam. Ma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad, where he says, innaka latasifu fadla sukut bil kalam. He says that speech is better than silence because you describe the greatness of silence through speech, but you don't describe the greatness of speech through silence. Very beautiful, yeah, very profound that the Imam alayhi salam says. And so we say that, okay, speech is better if I have balance in my lives. But again, we must stress what the Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt alayhi musallam teach us, and that is that this is not referring to every type of speech, but this is good speech, speech that is useful, speech that is beneficial. And again, we have to ask ourselves this question, that do I have to say everything that comes into my mind? Do I have to say everything that my desires tell me to do? And once we learn that balance, we will be able to be on this journey. If good speech is better, and we say that good speech is better if we have control, then we have to understand the importance of the tongue, for that is where speech finds its release from, and how to control it. You know, when we look at the tongue of an individual, it reveals a lot about a person. It reveals something about their physical nature as well as their spiritual nature. You know, the physical nature is quite interesting if you just Google this, right? That before the advent of modern technology, you know, doctors would look at the tongue to figure out what was wrong with the person, right? And certain doctors believe that many parts of the body are a microcosm of the whole. In other words, if you look at certain parts of an individual's body, it will tell you what's happening in the whole body. And he says the tongue is one of those organs where if you look at it, you'll be able to tell if there are any physical ailments. And so again, like for example, like I'm just going to mention a few because I don't want you then staring at the mirror trying to self-diagnose yourselves, you know. Use Google for that instead, you know. So for example, if your tongue is red, it indicates heat, and this could mean inflammation or dehydration. Pale tongue indicates a lack of blood flow. A purple tongue, lack of energy. So these things tell us something about the tongue, and this is the power or the beauty of this gift of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But more importantly, for our discussion about the journey towards God, the same way that the tongue describes medical and external illnesses, it describes perfectly the spiritual state of an individual. Yeah? Whatever is in the heart of a person, whatever is in the soul of a person, will eventually manifest itself out in the tongue. You just give it time. Yeah? If someone doesn't like you, they will make that known. If someone has a problem with something, they will make it known, because it's only so long that you can bite your tongue. Yeah? And so when you want to know a person, you know, Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam, salli ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad, he says, takallamu tu'rafu. He says, speak and you will be known. Yeah? Speak and you will be known. فَإِنَّ الْمَرْأَ مَخْبُوءٌ تَحْتَ لِسَانِهِ. Because an individual, a person, is hidden behind their tongue. Yeah? Whatever is in our souls, it will manifest itself. And this is why silence and speech is such an important journey towards self-purification. That if I have ailments within my heart that I'm trying to rectify, if I don't control my tongue, I will never be able to rectify that, because I will continue making mistakes. And so until I have mastered, or on that journey towards mastering my heart and my soul, I practice silence so that my inner nature is not revealed to others. And this is why Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala describes the tongue as one of the greatest gifts that He's bestowed upon us. Yeah? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Surah Al-Balad, He says very beautiful, أَلَمْ نَجْعَلْ لَهُ عَيْنَيْنِ وَلِسَانًا وَشَفَتَيْنِ وَهَدَيْنَاهُ نَجْدَيْنِ. He says, have we not given them two eyes and a tongue and two lips, and have shown him the two ways to success and the path of failure? Amazing that out of all the things that God talks about in the Quran, He talks about the eyes, He talks about the tongue, He talks about the lips of an individual. And then He immediately says that the journey of success or failure is dependent on how we utilize these gifts. How we utilize the eyes, how we utilize the tongue, how we utilize our lips will determine the path that we take towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You know, it's interesting, right? Like the eyes make sense because we see things. The tongue makes sense because we speak. But what about the lips, right? Out of all the things that God talks about, He talks about our lips. And again, when you look at the lips play an important function, right? Especially when it comes to the ability to articulate. You know, there are certain letters that one cannot articulate, like B, M, or Ba, or Ma. You can't articulate them. You can try them without your behind your mask. I won't be able to tell, yeah? You keep your mouth open, you try to say Ba, Ma. You can't say these words because you need your lips for articulation. Likewise, you know, the lips serve a function when it comes to eating and drinking. But most importantly, right, the lips serve an important function because they serve as a gate for the tongue. Yeah, that if you want to control the tongue, keep your mouth closed. Yeah, keep your mouth closed. We don't have to say everything that comes to our minds. We don't have to say everything that our heart tells us to say, even though we may think it will add benefit. But learn to practice silence more often. And this is, I think, a very important discussion, like as we mentioned last week, with Shahru Ramadan coming, as our stomachs are empty, keep our tongues empty as often as we can as well, and it will save us on a lot of difficulties that we'll have to amend later. Next week, inshallah, we continue on this discussion if Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gives us life. Wa akhiru da'wan, alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب
العالمين. In the name of Allah, the most gracious, the most merciful. All praise is due to Allah, the Lord of all worlds. O Allah, send blessings upon Muhammad and the family of Muhammad and hasten their reappearance. Greetings and salutations to the great nation of Iran, which has always safeguarded the integrity and independence of the country through their presence in various arenas. Peace and blessings of God be upon the martyr commanders of the IRGC, upon the unknown martyrs, and upon the martyrs of the intelligence community and the Ministry of Intelligence. Greetings and divine blessings to the Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces, who has successfully led the resistance against the camp of infidelity, oppression, and the dominance of the American Zionist agenda. The main enemy of this land, this nation, and this faith is not only the criminal gang ruling over occupied Palestine, but also a Zionist American movement that, in addition to us, is an enemy of many countries and nations, an enemy of truth, justice, and humanity. This time, the Western Dominance Club, in a fatal miscalculation, unleashed its rabid dog to attack our proud and powerful Iran. Thanks to the unity of the people, the strong and resolute defense by the armed forces of the Islamic Republic, the heroic sacrifices of the defenders of the homeland, the wise and courageous leadership of the commander-in-chief of armed forces, and the active presence of the esteemed president and the 14th administration, the world witnessed the defeat and humiliation of the illegitimate offspring of Western dominance, and they rejoiced. Today, I intend to discuss another aspect of the American Zionist regime's disgrace, its intelligence failure. In a statement dated June 9th, the Ministry of Intelligence announced the acquisition of a treasure trove of information from the hidden vaults of the Zionist regime and its transfer to Iran. The reality is that the anonymous soldiers of Imam Zaman infiltrated deep into the hidden chambers of the Zionist regime through one of the most complex, multi-layered intelligence operations and accessed its secret information in various fields, including nuclear, military, intelligence, and scientific domains. Today, I will only touch upon a portion of this information.
The story begins here, a film that reveals how millions of documents containing military and nuclear information, along with data from significant research projects and sensitive centers of the occupying regime, were smuggled out of the occupied territories, from the most secure nuclear sites and heavily guarded military facilities to designated safe locations, and then out of the occupied lands heading towards Tehran. Over the years, Iran's intelligence agency has recruited a network of operatives working deep within the military and security layers of the regime. Key figures within the regime are collaborating with the Islamic Republic of Iran, as they too have recognized Netanyahu's incompetence in safeguarding their own regime. This is part of the efforts of the anonymous soldiers of Imam Zaman in the Ministry of Intelligence, engaged in a round-the-clock battle for security and peace in Iran, and now even for the security and peace of the region and the world. The news of the mass exodus of highly classified documents that exposed the entire military and security networks surrounding the Zionists' nuclear weapons program detonated like a bomb in the corridors of power in Israeli regime. They were acutely aware of the blow they had received. Updated information that made visible the layered networks of individuals and projects involved in the construction and development of nuclear bombs within the Israeli regime. It also included all personal and professional details of those individuals and their connections with other countries. Includes extensive documents detailing the support from the U.S. regime and some European nations for the Zionist nuclear weapons program, as well as confidential agreements between the regime and several other countries regarding nuclear bomb development. Additionally, the regime's lobbying efforts to prevent other nations from accessing even peaceful energy sources, along with leaked correspondence from Iran to certain international organizations, to the regime's security agencies, and finally, the extensive collaboration between American technology companies and government entities with the Israeli regime for the construction and development of nuclear bombs and related knowledge. The subsequent operation, which was exceedingly complex and even larger in scale, involved data processing and transforming it into a network of interconnected and intertwined data, which, through the tireless efforts of analysts and experts from the Ministry of Intelligence, has now become a tangled web, a spider's web that is a vision of the terrifying threat of the occupying regime of Al-Quds against humanity. Due to the sensitive nature of this data, only a portion of it is disclosed. This extensive data network not only reveals the historical context of the regime's nuclear weapons program and all the individuals and entities involved, but is also highly effective for studying future developments. It is a live data network that allows for the prediction of subsequent changes, even if the personnel shifts. This operation was successfully carried out while the main operational and support agents completed their tasks safely and without interference from enemy services. Even if a few of the individuals involved in the operation have been identified, these individuals and cells remain unaware of each other, and the regime's security apparatus has yet to find a way to uncover other cells. At this moment, the regime's military and security structure, under the incompetent management of Netanyahu, has turned into a body infected with a virus that should brace for a worsening situation.
انجام حرفه‌ای و هوشمندانه پروژه نفوذ
The professional and intelligent execution of the infiltration project, which involved obtaining classified documents from the Zionist regime, successfully transferring these documents to pre-established bases, was merely one aspect of a powerful combination of operational intelligence actions. Although the treasure transferred into the country consists of millions of pages of various and diverse information regarding the Zionist regime, including past and ongoing military projects of the criminal regime ruling over the occupied territories, projects for the refurbishment and recovery of old nuclear weapons, joint projects with the United States and some European countries, the entire administrative structure and personnel involved in nuclear weapons, as well as researchers, scholars, and senior managers of these inhumane projects, the names of researchers and so-called scientists from America and Europe involved in the mentioned projects, and the addresses of facilities, companies, and all collaborators of these projects. The next very important and complex mission for the unknown soldiers of Imam Zaman is to process the information and uncover the relationships between various human and organizational elements and networks related to the regime's nuclear projects, both inside and outside the occupied territories. Discovering the relationship between elements and networks is as crucial as the infiltration project and the transfer of information into the country.
A vast amount of data has been transferred from the occupied territories to Tehran, now forming a complex web of processed information, a galaxy of names, addresses, internal and external relations, documents, projects, and even photographs are interconnected. This intricate network is the result of months of work by analysts at the Ministry of Intelligence, clearly indicating that the regime's nuclear program is intertwined with its armament initiatives. Just a small unit from a tiny cluster can provide a glimpse into the dimensions of the operations of the Islamic Republic's Ministry of Intelligence within the occupied territories. Oleg Riven works at the Negev nuclear facility, one of the seven main bases of the regime's nuclear armament program. Oleg Riven is a neutron specialist, a mineral chemistry scientist, and has expertise in working with microscopic laser materials. This image depicts the neutron program in which Oleg Riven specialized. He is involved in a joint project, a collaboration between the Negev nuclear base in the occupied territory and the Los Alamos National Laboratory in the United States. The name of the Los Alamos Laboratory is linked to the history of atomic bomb production. The first nuclear bombs of the United States, which led to the massacre of the people of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, were produced at Los Alamos. The collaboration program between Oleg Riven and Los Alamos is conducted under the auspices of a company called Rotem Industries. Rotem can be likened to Los Alamos in the occupied territories, focusing on the production of specialized military components and radiation detection. This shipping document indicates that Rotem has sent a shipment to the Los Alamos Atomic Laboratory in the United States. The shipment contains samples of chemical materials related to the nuclear weapons program of the occupying regime. The partnership between Los Alamos and the occupying regime includes a contract for the production and testing of bombs on a laboratory scale. These tests were initially conducted in African countries with the cooperation of the United States, But after this information was revealed by Russian and Chinese satellites, the tests were moved to the United States to be concealed under the guise of U.S. nuclear tests. These names represent the specifications and faces of the Zionist delegation that was established in Los Alamos in 2018 to advance these joint projects. One of Oleg Rivin's professors, Ilad Kaspi, is directly in contact with Los Alamos, and Rotem Industries is effectively under his supervision. Ilad Kaspi's role in the field of nuclear weapons is quite significant. His work focuses on measuring the quantity and arrangement of materials in the warheads of modern atomic bombs to achieve maximum explosive yield. In another part of this data galaxy, we encounter Ayal Yahoo, a senior manager at the Negev Nuclear Research Center, who works on neutron shaping and the analysis of atomic and semiconductor radiation. He is also a key figure in the connection between the production of nuclear weapons in the United States and the Israeli regime. The American National Energy Laboratory in Livermore, California, and the Los Alamos National Laboratory are centers collaborating with Yahoo. However, Yonathan Albez, born in March 1977, is the head of the Advanced Research Division of the regime's Atomic Energy Organization, focusing on nuclear radiation analysis and the control and optimization of nuclear weapon quality. Both Yahil and Albez are connected to Elazar Sarid, whose expertise lies in modern atomic bombs. One of his key specialties is increasing the plasma density of atomic bombs during nuclear fusion reactions and developing the infrastructure for testing nuclear weapon quality. Ron Ashkenazi, born in 1974, is another collaborator of the regime involved in the production of weapons of mass destruction. This senior member of the regime's Atomic Energy Organization works with foundations like Wiseman. The Wiseman Foundation was one of the organizations involved in the production of weapons of mass destruction that was destroyed during missile attacks by the Islamic Republic of Iran. However, no one knew what Wiseman's primary role in weapon production was. Names and faces such as Oleg Rivin, Ilad Kaspi, Ayal Yahoo, Yonatan Albez, Elazar Sarid, and Ron Ashkenazi are just a part of the Zionist scientists active in the regime's nuclear weapons program, which is now in the hands of the Iranian Ministry of Intelligence for future measures.
As I mentioned at the beginning of this program, at this current stage, we have only revealed a small portion of the millions of pages of information obtained from the Zionist regime. First point, this small portion has turned the pages of the history of the regime's secrecy and its supporters, putting an end to the regime's policy of nuclear ambiguity. Second point, our findings include the full names, addresses, and professional relationships of 189 nuclear and military specialists associated with the regime, along with the projects each of them is working on. And this list is still being updated. Third point, within the acquired treasure trove, there is precise information regarding sensitive military and scientific locations with dual-use applications which were targeted during the 12-day war after their coordinates were handed over to the country's missile units. Fourth point, this small amount of disclosed information reveals the collaboration between the U.S. regime and some European countries with the criminal Zionist regime. Additionally, it uncovers documents regarding the influence of regime officials and American senators over the agency and their acquisition of information related to our country's peaceful nuclear program.
Although the U.S. regime is by far the largest supporter of the Zionist atomic bomb, its Atomic Commission also has various programs with Europeans. The regime and the European Union have established a joint commission for nuclear cooperation and are advancing thermal hydraulic reactor projects. France is the regime's largest partner in the European Union regarding atomic bomb production. There are documents detailing 160 joint projects between France and the regime, with four of these projects being particularly significant. Most notably, The SARAF project focuses on the production of accelerators and enrichment facilities at the Sarek Center. This information comes from the discoveries of the anonymous soldiers of Imam Zaman, including the network graph of missile information, propulsion, and drone technology of the occupying regime, which involves weapons for transferring atomic bombs. Unfortunately, some international organizations are also under the influence of the occupying regime. Some individuals involved in the regime's atomic weapons and weapons of mass destruction are collaborators with those organizations. One example is Yaniv Shapishnik. Born in October 1981, he is the head of the research department at the Negev Nuclear Research Center, which collaborates with an international organization in the field of reactors. However, he is actually an expert in numerical modeling of atomic bomb explosions, aiming to minimize the amount of uranium and plutonium required in the bomb explosion cycle. The presence of these forces, which serve the destruction of humanity, reflects the dire situation of those organizations as their collaborators. This entity takes a hostile stance against Iran's peaceful nuclear activities while welcoming the creators of weapons of mass destruction among the Zionists as partners. Despite the agency's services to the regime, documents found revealed that the regime even spies on the head of the agency. Family and personal photos of the agency's head, which were among the documents leaked from the occupied territories, indicated that this regime was gathering information on the agency's head. The occupying regime knows no bounds and remains loyal to no one.
A significant number of employees from nuclear agencies, military institutions, and ordinary citizens of the Israeli regime collaborated with the Minister of Intelligence to obtain a wealth of documents and transfer them from the regime's intricate layers of protection to our beloved Iran. Two main motivations drove this collaboration. One was financial gain, meaning the receipt of money, and the other was a deep-seated hatred for the so-called corrupt criminal prime minister of the Zionist regime and a desire for revenge against him. Now I tell this vile killer that instead of thinking about solving Iran's water issues, he should focus on addressing the bread problems of many of his employees who have collaborated with us for monetary reasons and continue to do so right now. Additionally, I want to reveal the secret behind the Israeli regime's efforts to instill influence among the Iranian people and officials. The secret lies in the historic defeat of the 12-day war and the deep infiltration of the unknown soldiers of Imam Zaman into the innermost protected layers of the regime. The myth of infiltration was created, and unfortunately, some individuals within the country promoted it. We have never denied the enemy's intelligence infiltration and certain weak individuals within our ranks. Among these traitors, one has been identified, tried, and executed, and it is important to express gratitude to the judiciary for their efforts. Currently, we're also working on other espionage cases, but the desperate attempts of the Zionist regime to conceal the significant infiltration of the Ministry of Intelligence in their strongholds, hideouts, and secured vaults continue. They are also engaged in deceptive operations, particularly in covering up the technological methods used to gather information from our country. God willing, in the future, as we continue to reveal the treasures of the acquired intelligence documents, we will address these issues. In the end, I humbly thank God with my limited words and bow respectfully before the Iranian nation, asking everyone to pray for and support the unknown soldiers of Imam Zaman. Peace be upon you and God's mercy and blessings.
Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
The greenest spray I offer you, the sweetest bird song I offer you. They say that love strikes only once, that precious moment I offer you. Where is the rising sun? Where is the spring of hope? Where is the shining moon?
presence gives me strength, gives vision to my sight. Someday faith will increase, someday our wars will cease, someday there'll be justice, someday there will be peace. Everything I possess, I offer you. I want to be someone whom you can trust. Come save us from a world that's so unjust. Where is the rising sun? Where is the spring of hope? Where is the shining moon?
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with veterans of the Sacred Defense and the Resistance Field. The meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on September 20th, 2023, inaugurating Sacred Defense Week. What was being defended? The Islamic Revolution, the Islamic Republic, which was the product of defending the Islamic Revolution, and the country's territorial integrity were being defended. That was Saddam's goal. Their target was the revolution. They wanted to suppress this unparalleled, great, important revolution that had taken place in Iran thanks to the sacrifices that had been made by the people. Why do we say it was unparalleled? Because it was a phenomenon that had not taken place before in major revolutions. It was democratic, it was religious, it was authentic, it was not dependent. It was related to a nation. It was by the people. It was not like coups, revolutions by political parties, or things of that sort. This revolution was able to remove the dependent corrupt system that was ruling the country and establish a new system and a new voice in its place, the Islamic Republic. Republic means democracy. Islamic means religion. Religious democracy was a new term in the world. We have had religious governments throughout history, but there was no talk of democracy in them. We have had democratic governments, real or fictitious, but there was no talk of religion in them. Never before had there been a government or a system in which religion and this world and the hereafter and people and God were all involved and were the builders of it. But such a thing happened, and they wanted to crush it, overcome it, and eliminate the Islamic Republic. This was their target, and this has remained their target up until today. They come up with all different types of excuses, but as to those who are against the Islamic Republic, are opposing it, and are hostile toward it, their problem is with the Islamic Republic. Other marginal issues are of less importance. This is their main issue, and it was back then as well. Of course, there was a wicked, greedy person such as Saddam in the midst of this, who was far removed from any aspect of human decency. He had another goal as well, which was to destroy the Islamic Republic, to invade and assault the country's territorial integrity, to take the oil-rich regions of the country, and to divide the country. These were his goals, but the other parties didn't care much about these things. Their main concern was that, the Islamic Republic.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to all our listeners from around the world. I hope you will accompany us into the early hours of this morning, and this is our schedule. We start tonight's lineup with today's special, a special daily mixed format program that deals with various Islamic and Iranian occasions. That will be followed by Hadith of the Day. The program presents a hadith from the Holy Prophet and members of his household, the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them, along with a brief explanation and commentary on the hadith. And to round up this hour's program, we have our radio productions feature. Stay with us for this hour. Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program. Today is a special. Today's topic is oral health, scientific findings, and Islamic perspectives.
I pray to God.